Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Are we recording?
Yeah.
Nice.
Welcome.
Let's record. This is good. This is going to be a little bit different, guys.
No, Cassie. Cassie is sick. She's not. She's okay, I think.
I thought you were about to say. She's not really sick.
No. I was going
to
say.
She's just trying to get the fuck away from us for half a fucking second.
Yeah, probably. This happened before. Remember, we were up in the cupboard and I think I said rest in peace. So I was trying not to say that. She's okay.
I've brought the snort today.
She's
apologize.
Not with us. She's not with us in spirit, obviously.
Yeah.
And she misses each and every one of you.
Will I tell you who's also no longer with us?
Who?
This, like, 65-year-old granny who died, and one of the emergency services team was caught stealing, like, 50 quid from her...
Her dead body's corpse?
Not from the corpse, not quite that bad, from just the old dresser in her bedroom.
You see, granny
spotted it and pocketed it.
Old people are very flahoolic with the way they leave cash around the place.
But also,
I would do the same.
What granny's installing CCTV in their own bedroom?
Good point. How was this caught?
I know. It appears to be some kind of CCTV footage. So, I watched the footage. It's like videoed from the top corner of the bedroom. And
so
the
too
lad,
far away for an OnlyFans.
Yeah. Unless she enjoys a kind of a...
From a distance only fans.
Yeah. Like a kind of a voyeur, pervert CCTV kind of situation.
CCTV porn.
Yes, it is. And the guy who stole, like, I don't know why this makes it even less forgivable, but the guy who did the stealing was an older gentleman himself. Like, not... I would nearly, you know, if it was like somebody who's new to working the emergency services and he's young and... Oh, just, you know, his frontal, like Leo's girlfriend's, his frontal cortex isn't formed
developed
yet.
That is, it feels like a setup. Oh. Are you sure it's true? Is it a death trap? Fake death.
Now, that's interesting because I don't have the article in front of me anymore and I feel like I just saw it. It just popped up and then I, you know... Shut up.
Okay, sorry.
I'm pretty sure it's happened. Okay, hang on. Let's get some fact checking.
I reckon there are things
stealing
called like nan cams.
Nan cam.
Because I was there at my own grand today and I, if it was.
Excuse me.
100% true, was it?
Here we go. Yeah. This is bad now.
Oh, no.
She was 94.
Wow.
And like.
65.
Here we go. Do you want to see the footage?
Yeah. Oh, it is an Ann cam.
Oh, sorry, it's
a
living room.
He's literally rummaging through stuff there. So he's not just sliding a 50 off. He's moving shit around, looks at the value, puts it in his pocket. That little gimp.
I mean, he is so fresh off
such
the job he's doing.
Dickhead.
He's still wearing the latex job.
What an absolute
gloves.
Gunt, I would say.
Can I also point out...
He looks at the camera self.
No, does he?
Sort of.
No, I don't think he's looking at the camera.
Oh, dear. Now, he's in trouble, is he?
There's also some seriously weird... seating arrangement placement over here. What we have is a two-seater and two armchairs in a line together
for her mates to watch telly together.
Very strange.
Look, God be blessed. Okay, well, he's having a joint creep of the week then, because I've got a whopper today and it's a really sad creep of the week.
Take
a guess who it is.
Is it the 26-year-old East London con artist who scammed 10 million out of pensioners around the world?
No. It's the Dalai Lama.
Oh, no.
So he did something so odd. Now, keep in your mind here that the Dalai Lama is an 87-year-old gentleman.
Gotcha. 87.
So it's hard to say where confusion might come into this. So footage was captured, and it's a very unsettling interaction between a boy of the age of about 7 and this spiritual leader. And he, will I show you the footage?
I think you better.
Right, I'm going to spin it around at just the right time. So we've got the Dalai Lama and this lovely little boy. And the Dalai Lama sticks his tongue out. And what you can't hear on the video is that he asked the little boy to suck it. So they are so they are at a charity event. They're in the Dalai Lama's temple in India. And in the video, the little boy asks the Dalai Lama, can I hug you? To which he responds, okay, come, come here to me. Then the spiritual leader first asks the boy to kiss him on the cheek, pointing on his cheek, before pointing then to his lips. And the boy kisses him on the lips. Now, the boy looks like he does not want, like he came for a hug, and now it's escalated. Then he holds the boy's face, and as they briefly do a kiss on the lips, then they press their foreheads together. And just as the little boy goes to pull away, the Dalai Lama says, and suck my tongue.
Definitely says that.
Prompting him to slowly inch forward towards the 87-year-old's outstretched tongue. Whole thing video, nigh definition. And we know that there was obviously a tittering and laughter from the crowd.
No.
But no one's quite sure. People agree. We all agree this is not okay. So followers or whatever you call them, were utterly shocked to see this display and tweeted their shock, which prompted the Dalai Lama's Twitter account to issue a public apology.
Yeah.
He says, or one of his guys says,
one of his publicists says,
a video clip has been circulating that shows a recent meeting with a young boy asked, when a young boy asked His Holiness the Dalai Lama if he could give him a hug. His Holiness wishes to apologize to the boy and his family, as well as the many friends across the world, for the hurt his words may have cost. Caused. Words is not exactly accurate.
It's not really. Well, the words.
Well, it was a whole event, wasn't
it? It's the outstretched tongue. Then the words.
It's got good length on it, is the only thing I would say about that.
The tongue covered quite a kind of a vast gap.
As a short-tongued
person.
Tongued individual, I'm impressed. Anyway, he finishes, His Holiness often teases people he meets in an innocent and playful way, even in public and before cameras. He regrets the incident deeply. Just a little fluff up there, I would say, on the Dalai Lama's part. Not to take anything from him. Again, 87 years old. It's a long time to live. Do things get blurry at the end? Probably.
Well, things could be blurry. Be very blurry.
I tell you, I was with my own grandmother there today, and she's 87.
Did she invite you to suck any appendages?
She fucking did not.
Good.
She absolutely did not. Well, she made me a nice coffee and fed my children.
That's nice.
So, like, not hashtag not all elderly.
I mean, at 87, making coffee and dinner.
Yeah, she's driving around, so Jesus. Which is questionable. I would
at 87, all my grandparents were dead.
Sure, she's my useless. She's the last man standing of mine, but useless. Now, she wouldn't be on board for the babysitting necessarily, but God be well. So today, it's down to me and you. To deliver
something sensical. We don't have Cassie. We don't have Cassie here to keep us on the straight and narrow.
I know, and I've gone very weird.
Oh, tell.
Well, I got very trapped in the Victorian era there over the last few days. And so I need to purge some of what I know.
That's an unfortunate era to be trapped in.
It is if you're a woman.
It's a bit minus
or a baby.
Crack. Oh, no.
And I'm going to tell you all the ways in which they died.
Oh, really? The infant mortality is what you're going for?
Did you know 15% flat mortality rate? That's some percentage, I hear you say. And I'll tell you all the reasons why. And it's very unexpected. And it's all just like, all just trying to be cool and groovy. And keeping up with the Joneses is what those Victorians were doing. Anyway, I'll tell you when it's my time. All I'm saying is it's coming out one way or the other.
Keeping
I'm gonna pepper
up with the Joneses is what they're on.
I'm telling you.
Oh, so good. The that was such revolution. Complete and utter word salad.
Here's your man. 8 simple rules. I'm the...
Oh, yeah. He's Jordan Peterson.
Jordan Peterson of the Victorian era. I've come coming to you with a garbage bag full of nonsense.
Okay, so it's been a minute since I've told a Columbine story.
You are fucking shitting me.
And we're in, it is the season, it's April.
Okay, is that, that's when it all went down.
It happened, that's when it all went down.
Often after these stories, I need a day or two to fully let it pass through my system.
I know, I mean, I feel repentant every time I do this. And I have no excuse except that I gather them inside me and need to put them inside you.
I appreciate that. That is a need.
So patrons are the ones who are being most shat upon here because they had their most recent Columbine story
I would call
just
it
under 2 weeks ago.
Yes, waterboarding.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas main feed hasn't had a Columbine story for a hot minute.
All right.
And yeah... So
what
I'm
do we have
afraid
today?
I'm doing that.
So are we
to
going,
you?
Okay, are we going to pick an which angle are we coming in from?
I've got a survivor.
Excellent.
Yeah, I've got an amazing survival story.
Okay.
Which is a nice reversal. The last story for non-patrons we told was the unlikely and incorrect martyr of Columbine. Bit of a Christian blunder. Incorrect martyr of Columbine, Cassie.
God love her.
Yeah, I know.
Through no fault of her own.
No fault of her own. No, 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 no. She didn't do a thing wrong. Okay, so patrons, hello.
Buckle in.
Buckle in.
Or maybe your seatbelt is still on from the last
experience. Possibly still swallowing back the nausea from the last time we were in the library in Columbine on the 20th of April in 1999.
We're in.
So you want me to do this and then you can... I mean,
I'll pepper.
Cheer us up with infant mortality.
Yeah, yeah, I think it is cheery. Enough time has passed.
Imagine, this is how low I'm bringing us, that infant mortality is going to be the palate cleanser at the end of the ep.
Is there a phrase, a saying that's like, misery
loves company
to comedy?
Oh,
what's
yeah.
the formula? Time.
It's called tragedy plus time equals comedy.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, now... That is not...
Not now where we
not,
are.
Not now. We're
tragedy.
Still in Tragedyville with Columbine. I'm just thinking about the... do you remember that Louis C.K. joke about 9/11?
No.
Do you not?
Say it again.
Don't know whether I want to bring our attention to it, especially given it's Louis C.K. And it involves what else? Wanking. his trademark move.
Go on.
So he...
Something about a mid-century dildo?
No, it's, as far as I remember, it's that you knew how much of a bad person you were.
Oh.
By how soon after 9/11 you wanked.
I see.
Like, very potentially, some people went many weeks before wanking after 9/11. Like, just because of the aftershocks.
Yeah.
And then I'm pretty sure that Louis squeezed in a wank between
buildings.
Planes hitting, between buildings collapsing.
God, I hope he asked permission.
Okay, Louis C.K. detour over. Okay, so this is the miraculous survival story of the boy in the window, a.k.a. Patrick Ireland.
He came up the last time.
Well, I think I just, because he was in the library and we were talking about Cassie Burnell, who was in the library as well. And I alluded to Patrick Ireland, but I said I'll tell his story fully
another
one day
time, and
because
now the
it's
day
worth.
Has arrived.
And now just literally almost days later, I am now here to tell you about him.
Let's go.
Okay, so quick library recap. The library was the kind of highest concentration in Columbine. And if you... don't have the background on this, you have to go back through the episodes.
Punish themselves.
Punish them. Absolutely.
You must.
Them.
You simply must. 3 weeks ago, I think one of the patron episodes is there. So if you sign up now, just scroll back real quick.
Yeah. But I think like the main, the kind of original is quite a while ago. And I can't remember if it was on the main feed.
In the description of the last Columbine patron, I think I said when the other one was.
You are.
Now,
simply.
Bear in mind, I might be lying.
You are, in fact.
Oh, damn. I just scroll back to somebody's comment with it. Never mind. Let's power through. I'll find it another time.
We'll find it and we could try and put it in the description of this episode.
Yeah.
Would that be crazy? Okay. So, recap.
Yeah.
Columbine happened 20th of April, 1999. It was, at the time, the deadliest school shooting. It has since been surpassed.
Sadness.
A lot of sadness. There was 15 people were murdered, if you include Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris, who were the perpetrators. And there was 21 people gravely injured by gunfire.
Oh, God.
Okay. And so the whole attack, the duration of the entire attack was like basically about 40 minutes.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. Like 40 to 50 minutes.
Incredible.
And the highest concentration of murders took place in the library of the school. And that attack in the library of the school literally lasted for, doing a bit of maths, 7 minutes. 11:29 to 11:36 a.m. So they'd just kicked off the entire attack at 11:20. So they had planted bombs that didn't go off.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God, because they could have taken out like 500 people potentially if the bombs they had planted went off. But all of the bombs they planted, including two out in the car park, where they had believed people will congregate as they try to escape, and we'll get them with those bombs. I mean, step of this was meticulously planned and for maximum destruction.
Do you know if those bombs were actually intended to go? Yes. Why did they not go off?
Fucked up.
So they fucked up by doing that.
But
they had wholly intended also for these explosions rather than. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah. No, they had like serious bombs, like 20 pound propane tanks.
Oh, wow.
Pipe bombs.
I see.
And various containers filled with gasoline.
Okay.
The one in the cafeteria had 6 propane tanks.
Wow.
And
it's huge premeditation.
Yeah. And there was, before they got to the station, they bought another propane tank and they had attached pipe bombs and gasoline canisters. Like, they really were not phoning it in with the bombs. It was, thankfully, did not get up. And we went through this before. I'm just trying to remember from the last time how many of the murdered kids were in the library. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So sorry. 10 of the 13 victims were killed in this 7-minute attack in the library.
Okay.
It's insane. So at the time when they walked into the library, there was 52 students and 2 teachers and 2 librarians. So it's 56 people. So you basically had a 1 in 5 chance of being murdered. When they walked in, Eric Harris yelled at everyone to get up. People were immediately, because they'd heard commotion outside and the fire alarms had been ringing incessantly, everyone was kind of like terrified and already getting down, taking cover under these tables where they were not covered in the slightest. They were like sitting practically wide out in the open. Like, I was thinking about it because our library in school was very small and all the tables were like really close together. Mm-hmm. And I think I've always kind of pictured
that same library.
But actually the library was huge and like all the tables were like, you know, spaced out and it was a big, you know what I mean, compared to our library, say.
Did the children and the adults in the in there, one of the 56, did they know there was an active shooter at that point, or did they just think there was some emergency in the school?
I think they started realizing. They heard shots and things like that.
So their instinct then was to hide.
Yeah. Like they were afraid to get out. Yeah. They were afraid to leave the library.
Okay.
Well, it was, you know, it was kind of like rock in a hard place.
Exactly.
And it was one of the librarians who made the 911 call from behind in the office. And that captured the entire library massacre from beginning to end. You can hear the boys, Eric and Dylan, in the background, like shouting orders, shouting like slurs at students. And
did she survive?
Saying horrible things. Yes. It was only students who died in the library.
Oh, God.
So Eric walks in and Dylan at 11:29 and screams, "Get up," which is loud enough to be heard on the 911 call. And then when no one, yeah, that's it. You see, they knew the night, they called in that 911 call and she was like, "There's an active shooter."
Okay.
Yeah, so they definitely knew at that point. And when nobody got up, obviously, Eric Harris could be heard yelling, "Fine, I'll start shooting anyway." And so throughout the whole massacre in the library, it was all captured on the 911 call that the boys seemed to be enjoying themselves. They were like taking shots and shouting woohoo afterwards. They were saying things like anybody with a white hat, which sporting students on sports teams wore in Columbine, or a sports emblem on their jumpers is dead. So they were like, "Oh, we're targeting, you know, jocks," essentially, in shorthand, parlance of the times, jocks. Lots of the students tried to hide that they were wearing hats. So the police had kind of only recently arrived at the scene, and they shot out of the windows, Eric and Dylan, and the police started returning fire. And then Eric and Dylan like basically kept their distance from the windows.
The police started shooting into the library.
Yeah.
Where they knew there was many, many children.
Well, sorry, Eric and Dylan shot first. They shot out the windows, as in they blasted through the windows,
so the police,
and the windows broke.
Them at the windows, tried to take them
out. Tried to, yeah. And
because they were completely dressed in, I mean, there's no question they were...
They were active shooters, yeah. But they were like fucking draped in ammo.
Yeah.
And carrying huge weapons.
Massive guns,
sawn-off shotguns and things like that. And so basically, at one point, Dylan... started shooting at this table nearby, near the windows, and he injured these three boys who were sitting underneath it. They were all friends, obviously. They'd been sitting in the library together. There's a boy called Patrick Ireland, another boy called Daniel, and another guy called Mackay. And so basically the chaos was just like raining. Like there was just like continual shooting basically going on, and children being killed and injured, with also Eric and Dylan taunting them all the way through. Eric told one girl who he had just shot in the shoulder and severed a major artery to quit her bitching when she, you know, obviously started gasping in pain. We talked last week about Cassie Burnell and Eric taunting her, banging on the surface of the table where she was hiding and then leaning down and saying peekaboo before shooting her in the head. Fucking, it was chaos and horrible, just relentless horror. And basically, Patrick Ireland had seen that his friend needed help. he'd been wounded in the knee and he leaned out to try and help his friend. And that's when Dylan Klebold shot him. He'd already been shot once in the foot, but this time he got shot twice in the head. So basically, his head had just popped up over the edge of a table for like a split second, and Dylan Klebold immediately shot him in the head. So,
this time he had been shot three times, two in the head,
yeah,
and was alive.
Well, he basically lost consciousness, okay. And so what happened next was that.
He looked dead to the lads, presumably.
The two lads left the library. Like, as we said, 7 minutes after they had kicked off the massacre. And all of the injured, so there was 10 injured survivors and 29 uninjured survivors, started to try and escape the library through this exit door. Which led down to a sidewalk. So the library's on the second floor of the building. And literally, they were trying desperately to move the injured kids as well. Like, one injured girl was rescued. Patrick Ireland, our friend, shot twice in the head, was completely unconscious. Mm. And his friends were just trying and trying and trying to pull him with them, but they were injured as well.
Oh, God.
And basically everyone was terrified of the guys coming back.
Of course. And they were in the hallways at this point. There was nowhere to hide there. Or had they left the library? When he was trying
they
to
had
pulled.
Left the library when all of the...
the two lads had.
But yeah, Eric and Dylan had left the library.
Yeah.
7 minutes after they'd entered, and then all of the like 30 odd people who were still alive and breathing, 10 of whom were really injured, started to evacuate.
Okay,
but they couldn't evacuate of the like really gravely injured ones. And like I said, his two friends, Patrick Ireland's two friends, tried desperately to move him. They were trying. He was drifting in and out of consciousness. And basically all the kids, it was chaos. They were running for their lives. And his friends were trying to drag his limp body, but they were too injured. And everyone was terrified that the killers were going to come back. And so they left him. And also, to be fair, apart from just the sheer chaos and trauma that they were experiencing, they were looking at their friend who was shot twice in the head. So like...
they thought he was a lost cause. He might also be dead at this point.
Yeah.
As far as they were concerned.
Yeah, like basically there was all these wood splinters torn from the top of the table that the gun had passed through, like kind of the gun had kind of skimmed the edge of the table and like embedded all of these wood splinters into the top of his head.
Okay.
Where the bullet had skimmed. And then basically a second bullet had burrowed 6 inches into his brain.
Wow. He was alive.
So.
But unconscious.
Yeah. Basically, bits of his optical center were like immediately destroyed. And most of his language capacity was completely fucked. He like started passing in and out of consciousness, as I said. And he was, all of his neural pathways, like some of them have been severed. Like 6 inches into the middle of your head. Like that is... right in the center of your brain, essentially. His perception was so fucked up that he couldn't tell that when he was speaking, it was complete gibberish. And he was shot above his eyebrow on the left side, and that controls the right side of the body. So immediately his entire right hand side was completely slack, and he was completely paralyzed.
And that's why they couldn't get him going.
Yeah, couldn't get him going. And again, I do think you're looking at your friend who is shot in the head, and you just think, I guess that's probably it.
But both his friends also injured, so
completely.
But he himself was conscious, couldn't speak, but when he did float back into consciousness, was thinking, I'm a goner here.
I think right after, the aftermath, he wasn't forming
those types of
kind
thoughts.
Like the thing with the type of injury that he had that seemed to emerge was that, like, he couldn't grasp immediate events that had just happened.
Okay.
He only had this sense that something awful had happened.
And he needed to survive, get the so fuck out of there. So he
was lying there when Eric and Dylan came back into the library about 25 minutes later. And by now, the whole library was deserted
except for the dead.
And Patrick Ireland, who probably this saved his life, he was unconscious when they came back in. So probably looked dead. Mm. And there was another girl called Lisa Kreutz in there as well. And they got back into the library. They shot out the library windows again at police. Police returned fire, but nobody was murdered. And by 10 past 12, Eric and Dylan had killed themselves.
Mm.
So meanwhile, in this like school, this elementary school, national school, kind of nearby called Leawood, they had already set up this kind of like check-in system where parents and children could go and try and find them, sell each other
at a safe distance
from Columbine. Exactly. And like there were sign-in sheets and parents searching for their kids everywhere, and like Kathy Ireland is Patrick's mother, and like the more and more kids came in that were being reunited with their parents, the kind of more their chances of their own son being okay were dropping.
Unimaginable.
And like basically, the thing is that the evacuation was chaotic because word wasn't out that Eric and Dylan were dead.
Mm.
And
of course, sure, who was going to report that? Nobody
in the library.
In the canteen.
No, they killed themselves in the library.
Oh, so but when there was no one there.
No, just Patrick and this other girl, Lisa, and both, neither of them. Like, Lisa, I think, testified later that she'd heard them shout 1, 2, 3 before they shot.
Okay.
But then, like, that was reported in a newspaper, and she later said she had never spoken to that newspaper. Right, okay. So there's like very conflicted accounts of what had happened. But basically, the SWAT teams and everyone outside had to essentially treat it like there was still an active shooter in the school. They didn't even know how many shooters there were, because kids who were coming out completely hysterical and traumatized were already...
Didn't know either.
No, exactly. And already there was like this stories kind of mythology everywhere, kind of growing that, you know, about like the trench coat mafia, and like that they were, that the kids had been, that Eric and Dylan had been bullied, which was kind of erroneously reported. Like, it was kind of described as like for the night, for like there was kind of 90 minutes of chaos, and the killers basically seemed to be everywhere in the school. And they'd managed to, like, they had started to lead survivors out of the school, and there's lots of footage of them running out with their hands covering their heads, which is just so tragic because that wouldn't have helped them if they were shot at. And part of the shootings did begin outside the school, so it was very possible that at any moment the kids, Eric and Dylan, could reappear and shoot out at the survivors who were fleeing. And then basically, you know, the killers were dead around 12, but between 1 and 2, half 2, there was still this sense that it was unfolding, like, because the SWAT teams hadn't gone in yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was at one point, police actually nabbed 3 students that they believed were responsible. And news filtered back into students who were still hiding in the school that the
arrests had been made
and that the shooters had surrendered. So
what was that about, do you think?
Well, you see, in the school, they had televisions. So there were like many students still hiding in classrooms who were able to watch the TV coverage.
The live news rolling coverage. Oh, yeah. Mad.
Mad. Like, there's one news reporter who was speaking to a boy hiding inside the school via his cell phone. And he was saying, he was describing where he was hiding, and she had to cut across him and say, "Don't say anything because this is being broadcast and this could be seen by the, you know, killers. Like,
holy fuck.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You'd wonder, that particular instance, is that fucking, should that news, should that have happened? You know, that way it was just like, why? I guess there were so many students still remaining in the school. You know, the police were obviously there already.
Yeah.
But why the fuck was a news reporter allowed to kind of make contact with a live? Although there's nothing to stop it being allowed, but it just is like.
Yeah. Like,
surely that should never have happened or never be the case.
I know. It's also weird to imagine how they managed to actually find the number for the media. Like, they could have been trying to ring 911 and potentially not getting through.
Or were they getting calls from the media who were picking up mobile numbers from the kids who were out?
I mean, that's possible. That is very possible. Do you remember that when we were in school and there was an anthrax scare?
Of course.
Somebody in the school rang, like, was it Jerry Ryan's TV radio show?
Somebody in one of the classrooms. Was it Evan or Scott Gray? It was one of the lads.
Somebody from our year.
I don't know. But anyway, they were live on the radio.
Yeah. Like, so we were in school. There was a.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Anthrax scare, so somebody mailed
powder,
something like what was innocuous,
yeah,
and we were all evacuated and
hazmat guys showed
up, yeah, yeah, and so that's it. Somebody got into so much fucking trouble for ringing RT radio,
yeah,
so yeah, it could have been stuff like that. So like, what's really tragic is that there was such a delay in SWAT teams going in. Like, there was something like a 90-minute delay
before
the first SWAT teams went in that, like, for example, the teacher who was murdered in the massacre bled out.
Oh, and for God's sake. Like, could have
really,
been saved,
really may have not. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was also, like, at one point, they could see inside one of the windows this big whiteboard that somebody had written one bleeding to death on. Oh
my God.
I mean, and wheeled it over to the window to try and communicate.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Was that the person themselves bleeding to death that wrote that?
They couldn't decipher whether it said I bleeding out or one bleeding out. So, Jesus. I can't remember. But basically, meanwhile inside the library, Patrick woke up having been shot in the head. So, he had this strong sense of needing to get the fuck out of where he was, but could not remember what had just happened. And he started...
Could he see around him?
Well, yeah, but his perception was so fucked up. So he basically... His vision was really fucky, and he had one whole part of his vision was completely blank.
Okay.
But what was happening was it was actually blood pouring from his head wound down blinding over his eye, and he had no perception that
he couldn't feel it, so his that was left hand side of his body, so he couldn't raise his arm to wipe it away.
Oh, completely. Like, he started trying to crawl, but half his body was completely paralyzed. He couldn't even crawl, never mind stand. And so he, with his left hand, started trying to drag himself forward, but each forward drag took so much out of him that his brain just gave out.
Oh God.
He came in and out of consciousness, and each time he regained consciousness, he just had this drive to get to reaching the light. You know, like, he couldn't see enough clearly.
So the window,
to identify like the window or even obstacles. It's not possible to say how long, like how many times he passed out and then came to again before he made it to the windows. But a bloody trail later examined revealed a very kind of convoluted route. So basically, when he first came to, he was only like about 8 feet from the window. So close. But basically, he just went the wrong direction.
He couldn't orientate himself.
He could not, exactly. And he was hitting obstacles, tables, bodies, and just like trying to get towards the light. It took him 3 hours to get to the window.
How the fuck had that much time passed? So we're still within the time. So he woke up, the lads were dead.
Yeah.
And there was no one in the had discovered the bodies in the library yet.
No, yeah. So like SWAT teams only started, I think, to enter the building around 2:30.
Okay. And what time was it then?
It is probably close to 3 at this point, because the boys murdered themselves or, you know, died by suicide just after 12.
How close was he to the their bodies, do you know?
Not close. Okay. They went into the bookcase stacks and shot themselves there.
Were they in the same row?
Yeah, they were kind of beside each other. So Eric Harris was sat down with his back against a bookcase, and he shot himself up through the roof of his mouth. So practically from about eye line up,
head blown off,
exploded. And Dylan was kind of about maybe looks from the photographs to be about 4 feet away on his. Was on his knees, shot himself in the temple with a sawn-off shotgun.
More explosive.
And he collapsed forward.
Okay.
Less explosive, actually. Incredibly. Like, his head was more or less intact compared with Eric Harris's. There's one thing. Yeah. So there was one photograph taken of them and published. So I unfortunately contain that image inside my brain. But basically, from that photograph, Dylan Klebold had fallen forward kind of and managed to cover his own weapon. So there was this theory for a while that Eric Harris had murdered him and then murdered himself, but that was disproven.
Do you think they went there in order to hide themselves so that it would take authorities that little bit of additional time to find them and confirm the two shooters were dead, allowing the injured to die? Do you think that was an intentional move on their half? I realise you're not either of them.
I know it sometimes seems like they're back. I know. And using me as a conduit.
Exactly.
But no, I have no idea.
You know more than them now at this point.
Jesus.
Do you know what's going on in each of the rooms?
I actually fucking do. Jesus, that's disturbing. So it took Patrick Ireland 3 hours to get to the window. Just dragging himself by one arm forward. Lose
what
consciousness.
Was the plan at the he was trying to get away.
The voice in his head was like, "You need to get out, get out, get out, get out." He had no idea what really had happened, even, and so he managed to pull himself up at the window when he finally got there, and there the window was like the whole frame of it was covered in jagged glass.
Yeah.
So he had this kind of like he managed to kind of slump himself slightly leaning against the frame. And like pick away some of the glass.
Okay.
And then, so basically, he was spotted in the window by a SWAT team member who was riding in a media helicopter. I think that's some of the irony is that like there was media, there was more media at the scene than law enforcement at some point.
With better equipment.
Yeah, practically. And so they immediately alerted the SWAT team on the ground. There's someone in the window of the library. They could just see that he was moving really strangely
and covered in blood.
And he basically couldn't climb, obviously. His only option was to lean over the window.
Okay.
Like leaning, the window is at waist height.
I see.
So he basically just like folded forward,
yeah,
with no idea that he was
out
like
a window,
head first down onto a concrete ground 2 stories below.
Jesus. So they were like, we got to get to this kid before he throws himself out.
The SWAT teams were screaming at him to stay there, stay there, stay there. There was also snipers everywhere because, again, they just didn't know what was happening inside the building.
Do you think there was a moment that he looked like a threat? He always looked like he was in bad shape.
Very bad shape. And they were screaming at him to wait, but like he wasn't processing their words in any way. He could just hear this like cacophony. So he did not wait. They managed to pull a SWAT truck, like an armored truck, under the window. And two SWAT team guys were like bounding up on top of this truck to try and grab him.
Yeah.
In the footage, they like barely get a hold of his arms. He kind of collapses forward, like folding in half with his head dangling downwards.
Okay.
And he kind of was like that for a minute. And he couldn't quite get the momentum to get over the sill. So there's this moment in the video that's insane looking where he basically just like, I think, marshaled all of his reserve and kicked his good leg. And he's literally vertical in the window. And a second big kick kind of gets him over.
And they catch him.
They managed to kind of grab his arms. They fluffed catching him because it happened so fast. So he kind of flips over and hits the side of the truck. And this entire thing was being broadcast live.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And his own sister.
His mother and his everyone knowing immediately that's him, or is he identifiable?
His own sister didn't recognize him.
Okay, well, that is a saving grace nearly, is it?
I guess so. I mean, it's maybe. It's just so deeply disturbing that they let the cameras roll.
A child.
Yeah.
Look, it's happening every day. We were watching people getting pulled out of rubble, newborn babies in Ukraine. And like, this is our time. That is what just seems to happen.
I know, but I do think there's something about like
this particular spectacle type of,
being made of tragedy. And like, yeah, it's the same with
kind of
individuals. It's the same with the war for sure. But I guess I almost am like,
is this different
with war reporting? Is it like less prurient and more like an indictment of the war?
Correct. Yeah.
And the indictment of the enemy. Do you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whereas some of the
it feels
a bit gratuitous. Gore, porny. Yeah, it feels a little bit exploitative. But I don't know. I mean, look,
it happened.
It's interesting. There's
a conversation to be had.
The
place of the media in these types of incidents.
Absolutely. And the thing was that in the aftermath of Columbine, like, the media was like voracious in their appetite for stories.
Mm.
Like, there was kind of two Denver newspapers that over from April 20th on into like August of that year, so over like 5 months, were running between them 10 stories a day about Columbine.
And like, they, was that,
now I am aware that I am sitting here.
Well, no, this is the story of a victim. I think this is the difference. I would hazard a guess there that of those 10 stories, a large percentage were murder focused.
But also, yeah, and kind of the question of why. And also a lot of stories about the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office not being transparent with evidence and things like that.
Hmm. Is that a separate story?
Could take you down another warren of the basement tapes, which are long tapes that Eric and Dylan shot of themselves leading up to the attack.
Doing what?
Talking endlessly, fucking wanking on.
Manifesto.
Because they're fucking 17-year-old pricks with God complexes.
Planning the attack?
Yeah. Like, they recorded footage on the morning of the attack. Sorry, this is probably covering old ground slightly on that previous Columbine episode.
That was a long time ago.
They recorded footage like literally hours before the attack where they kind of essentially said goodbye and things like that.
Within that was their...
Like, Dylan Klebold said to his... Did they
say sorry to their mom? Do I have a memory of that?
Yeah, Dylan Klebold said to his mom or his parents, I'm sorry for the shit that'll probably come down after this. So that's the extent of that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they both have like extensive journals. Fascinated by the journal keeping. Did you keep a diary as a teenager?
You did. I remember trying to read yours once.
I didn't do.
I wasn't that much. No. Day to day.
If I did, it was probably like a week long whim. Whereas these two were fucking.
It was kind of Adrian Mole time for me and you. But this, that was. This is so. Can I ask another question just quickly on them for a minute?
Mm.
Within, to your knowledge, and their journals, do they work side by side, or had they had their sort of brains meshed into one individual at that point, or were there breakaways? You know, between, were there moments in either of their journals with a question mark, or there was, because their media had decided that there was a leader in this.
Yeah, like it's always been the kind of received wisdom is that Eric Harris was the psychopath and Dylan Klebold was the depressive, and that Eric Harris kind of wanted the destruction and Dylan wanted to kill himself, and this seemed as good as good a way as any.
Okay.
I don't really
buy it.
No.
Why?
I don't. As you know, I've just finished reading Sue Klebold's memoir, Dylan Klebold's mother, and she has become like a mental illness advocate and like a kind of suicide you know,
prevention
activist, and like she's not like obfuscating in her memoir or, you know, making excuses, but I do think that whole narrative of like Eric Harris being the psychopath, Dylan Klebold being the depressive, is kind of just passing the buck, and I think it's just downplaying and minimizing like how much rage and just badness that anyone would have to have in them to participate.
Okay.
Even if you're not the driver, like at any moment in the, like they were planning it for like a good year.
What age were they?
At the time of the attacks, Eric was 18 and Dylan was 17. But Eric was only recently 18 because they had to get a friend of theirs to buy three of the guns at a gun show. This was this young girl called Robin who, I mean, truly had no idea what she was
Serve any time? Was there any crimes?
Yeah, there was convictions. Now,
sorry, now I've brought you way off.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head what they were actually charged with and what time they did. Feel bad now. I can't.
Who's they?
So there was Robin. I think her name is Robin.
The older friend who helped them buy the guns.
Yes. Then there was.
But said she had no knowledge of the plan. And
no.
Wasn't involved in any of the videos, the basement tapes, or diary writing.
Exactly. And then, like, you know, they were in Colorado. So, like, it would be, like, reasonable, I guess, that they wanted them for hunting or, you know.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
They completely lied to her about what they were
intending to do.
And. Okay, so there's one guy who was like 22 and I think knew them through one of their after school jobs, and he sold an assault pistol to them, and he was charged with recklessly providing a handgun to a minor.
Jesus.
Yeah, he surrendered to authorities.
Mm-hmm.
Other people in Dylan and Eric's friend group were like closely questioned. They didn't get arrested, and there was no sense that they knew anything of the attack.
Okay.
But like, if you sort of started to piece together different sort of claims made by them, there was a picture of like, you know, some of them knew about the pipe bombs. Some of them knew, do you know the way, about the shooting fucking target practice and things like that.
Yeah, they weren't entirely secretive. Obviously, partially.
I think none of them knew the plan.
I can imagine them sort of making jokes and saying random things. And
yeah,
like their friends and people around them wouldn't have any necessarily reason to think what they were saying was.
And also, teenage boys just talk so much crap.
Yeah.
Now there was like a website that Eric Harris made about a year before the attacks, where he like threatened another student called Brooks Brown. Mm-hmm. So like that was open, visible to the public. And Somebody told Brooks Brown about this website and he was understandably really scared and really freaked out. And then so his parents alerted authorities to the website, but the authorities just really dropped the ball and didn't
follow up.
No. Isn't that crazy?
Also, I guess the idea of a website had a totally different connotation. It has one now than it did back then.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking a really basic...
Because now all we see are people taking their plans and ideas from the internet out into the open world.
And over and over.
Over and over and over again. Whereas back then, the internet was like, what is it? Is it an online...
book.
Journal.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Like, I guess that it was less common for people to, well, as you said, have any real understanding of it.
Yeah.
And then there was also the fact that Eric and Dylan were arrested the summer before the shootings for breaking into a van. And then, like, basically, as a part of them not being charged, which would have been a felony, they're like put into this program called Diversion, which was like sort of a mixture of kind of
juvie,
sort of community service, sort of counseling, and like
light.
They were both so well behaved and, you know, deceived the counselors that they were released from the program early. And Eric Harris in particular was like named as just like this model kid.
And before, when that
and
happened,
he's the one who's supposedly the psychopath, you know,
yeah,
able to, you know, put up any kind of mask.
And when that happened and they were punished for that act, this is all during their planning time.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Like, they were ordered to pay back some money to the owner of the van.
Mm-hmm.
And like, there's definitely in one of their journals, like, bitching and whinging about having to pay back some money because they were spending their money on amassing an arsenal of weaponry.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, like they were there and working in their little pizza cafe.
Where was all this stuff?
I think it's... So Eric Harris's parents have never spoken publicly.
Interesting.
But it seems like it probably was his house because... the Klebolds, who have been more outspoken, and obviously Sue wrote that book, describe sometimes searching their son's room because they had an older son called Byron who had kind of had like trouble with drugs and things like that. And so they were on the qui vive a bit more.
Right.
I think they were, because the police searched their rooms and found things, but I think they found more things like makings of bomb and stuff like that in Eric Harris's house.
Mm.
So basically, as I said, they were watching this live on television, Patrick Ireland flopping out of the second story window. And so his parents were still over in the elementary school with no idea where their son was. And only that they asked a neighbor to go back to their house and check their answering machine, they would still, they basically spent like 4 to 5 hours in terror,
yeah,
absolute terror. And the neighbor found just dozens of messages from themselves saying, Patrick, if you get home, please call us, blah, 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 you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally one from a hospital saying, we have your son, please call.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And part of the problem when they took Patrick to the hospital in the ambulance, they got the name wrong initially because he couldn't say his own name properly.
Oh,
so he'd like been trying to say his name, and it came out as Rick Ireland. So they thought they had this kid called Rick Ireland, mm-hmm, for ages. And so basically he went straight into surgery. The surgery was supposed to last an hour. It lasted 3 hours. They cleared lots of the kind of debris that was in his skull, but they couldn't dig in deep enough to actually get the bullet. The bullet was going to stay in his brain for life.
Wow.
They had no idea what they were even going to be able to achieve because brain cells don't regenerate.
That's right.
And though sometimes they can reform pathways.
Connections, yeah.
Yeah. And so incredibly, he came to after the
surgery.
had no idea what had happened. He was so confused, he thought that he'd been shot in the ER of the hospital.
Oh, God, love him.
He couldn't, like, in his mind, when he was making sentences, it sounded normal, but when he replied, it was garbled. Completely garbled.
Did he have sight?
Yes. Incredible. Still paralyzed. Okay. And he asked, for example, after a while, when he couldn't speak and he couldn't communicate, he asked for a board and a pen to write down things on. And even when he wrote things down, it was just garbled.
Frustrating.
Yeah, so frustrating. Then he finally did start to talk, but like the words he was saying were like capital cities. And because apparently he'd been in studying capital cities right before the attack began.
No way, his brain was going back to that point.
His brain had just like latched.
The whole incident.
Yes. And also this other phrase that he just kept saying over and over, which is so strange, is picture perfect marsupials.
He'd obviously read it.
He'd obviously been reading it or something. And so it was absolutely bananas.
So the parents raced over. They, he gets out of.
Yeah.
He has no idea. Well, he also can't communicate. But we know now he doesn't know what happened.
He doesn't know what happened.
They're like, what is the prognosis here? Is he coming back?
Yeah. They have no idea like what level of brain damage he's suffered.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously he's still paralyzed on his right side.
But thank God he's alive.
Yeah. And so he... Finally, he's kind of starting to be able to communicate a bit better. And like his mother, for example, is just like going through so many emotions of rage and devastation. And he basically just tells her to forgive Eric and Dylan. He's just like,
I can't deal with this.
I have to
move on,
get myself better.
Exactly.
And if I'm angry, that's just going
wasted
to.
Wasted energy.
Exactly. So this is a kid who's like 17 years old.
Spiraling. How did this fucking happen? How could this have happened?
Of course.
She's obviously in contact with all the children. Parents are dead now.
Yeah.
So she's in an absolute hellstorm.
Yeah.
He's focused on getting through it and continuing to live and survive.
Even the first week in hospital, he doesn't even know the magnitude of what's taking place. Like nobody tells him. Yeah.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Really?
It's not until he gets a call. So he was in Spain, like before the spring before the attacks, like doing a kind of an exchange program. And the family that he stayed with calls to see if he's all right. And he's like, how do they know?
Oh my God.
Like he doesn't even realize that this is being broadcast around globally. The world.
And so then they're forced to tell him.
Yeah.
Presumably when the Spanish exchange student parents are like, are you okay?
Yeah. And that's when he finds out one of his best friends was murdered.
No.
And
was it one of the two guys? Did the two guys who tried to drag him out survive?
They did, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
One of his best friends who was also in the library sitting with him.
Was that friend in the library? I think that friend was in the library. And he, as I said, is just like so focused on getting better. But really the prognosis was so shit. Like they were basically like, if he talks again.
Miracle.
Like miracle. Like, because even though he was sort of starting to speak a bit, his speech was so slow and so kind of fractured. Mm. And it would take him a long time to get single words out and things like that. And they also just thought he probably won't walk again.
Okay.
But 9 weeks after being admitted, he walked out. Yes. On a crutch.
Holy fuck. So he regained feeling and control of his left-hand side of his body.
I mean, truly
some
by sheer will.
Jesus.
Like, he talks about how it felt to try and start getting some feeling back in his right leg. Like, they wanted him to just, he wanted to walk. They were like, if you can even just twitch this leg, you are really doing well. But, like,
he wouldn't settle.
He, yeah.
He pushed through. Well, he did have the ability to. Will of force of will is strong.
Yeah.
But the fucking bottom line here, there needs to be the ability still. And it obviously did remain somewhere deep in his brain.
He's an extraordinary guy. Because even before any of this happened, since he joined high school, he always said he wanted to be valedictorian. And valedictorian, like, is different in America than it is here. Do you remember valedictorian in our school just made a speech at the end of school? I can't remember if they were head boy or a head girl or whether it was just somebody separate.
Was it like the smartest person in the class?
Well, no. Like, I don't think it has to be in Ireland, but in America...
It does.
It does. You have to have straight A's. And he was upset in college, in school. Sorry. In school, he was like... basically just a grafter, like not one of those kind of really naturally smart people who just like kind of cruise into A's. He just was like obsessed with keeping, he basically, you need straight A's to become valedictorian. And when he was in the hospital after the attack, he was like obsessed with still achieving his goal of being valedictorian. And he basically was like, I don't have time for this.
Well, they couldn't fucking not give it
to him. True. Would have been really, really shitty.
Do you know what? We see you, Patrick, but no. But look,
the grades dipped after the massacre.
You know what I mean?
We couldn't help but notice. So, no, he, the school reopened like 4 months after the massacre. So what happened was the actual attacks happened on April 20th. So the school just went into shutdown and every single fucking person was in the midst of PTSD. So nobody was finishing that year.
Okay.
And so they reopened the school on the 16th of August. And like they had this whole game plan for reopening the school because they like, so intermittently they had let some of the survivors back into the school
to process as part of a grieving process.
Yeah. And also to just get their shit. Like loads of people just absolutely fucked it out of there without their possessions. Okay. Things like their mobile phones and things like that. And also you remember from the Cassie Brunel episode, that was when Craig Scott realized he had like fingered the wrong person for being the martyr.
That's right.
That's a deep cut for the patrons.
So April, May, June, July. So we're only four months out.
So they'd done some like reconstruction because obviously there was damage and things like that.
They'd mopped up the
and in that
blood.
Meantime, the school had become a site for tourists.
Yeah. I'd say a lot of Jesus tourists as
well. Well, there was a lot of Jesus tourists exploiting some of the stories like Cassie Brunel's. Mm. But also there was just tour buses who were like,
what?
Rocking up. Seriously. It became a joint first place with the Rocky Mountains.
4 months later.
Within those 4 months. It was like the hottest spot in Colorado to visit.
That's like visiting Auschwitz. When the fucking burners haven't cooled down.
Yes.
Batshit.
Absolutely batshit.
They shouldn't have allowed that.
Well,
it was just beyond their control. They were just like, we can't have a stake of guards here.
I think they were 24/7. In such a shitstorm.
No one knew what to do.
Media, just like
victims,
laser focused on the tragedy. Then these tourists. Then all these children that they're trying to
facilitate their education and
their recovery and actually reconstruct the school. Like it's an unending shitstorm. And then, you know, a lot of the parents were putting together lawsuits and things like that at this point in the aftermath.
My God.
So on the day that the school reopened, they like had to have an actual strategy for how the hell they were going to do this without the media. Without it being a feeding frenzy for the media. So what they did was they recruited thousands of like neighbors, people from the nearby towns, to form a human chain
around the school.
Yeah, around the grounds of the school. And so that way it was to block the media.
But also show a visual show of support for the victims.
Isn't that mad?
Very moving.
Very fucking moving.
Yeah.
And the kids, like, definitely there was talk about how much resentment there was among the student population that even just the word Columbine was like now a noun.
Exactly.
Or not like a noun, but like now the name of a tragedy as opposed to the name of a school.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had like a kind of, a slogan of like, take back the school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was such a kind of sense of like, we will not let these fuckheads, Eric and Dylan, win. And we won't let the media win because I think the thing with the media is it had become grotesque.
Absolutely. Like
they put those two boys on the cover of Time magazine. Do you know what I mean? Like they published photographs of their
dead bodies.
Dead bodies. Like it just was
Patrick's live broadcast.
Yeah,
as he
exactly.
was slumped out the window.
Yeah, so there was a lot of anger among students directed towards that, understandably. And then, so Patrick Ireland went back to the school. He fucking nailed it, got all his straight A's that he still needed to get. To be fair, they might have gone easy on him. Over, like, he recuperated in an insane amount of time. He was shot in the head, predicted to be paralyzed for life. By the following September, he was attending school.
Wow.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. He wanted to do architecture in college, had always. But he started to suffer seizures as a result of his brain injury.
Bullet still in there.
Yeah, yeah. And like, so he collapsed on one particular trip to London that was like really, really severe. Severe seizure on the sidewalk of London. And basically they kind of realized that like it might be risky, too risky for him to go to college like out of state and, you know, live away from home and stuff.
His dreams.
His dreams. His fucking dreams. So they decided that he'd go to college and study business instead.
Get the fuck out of here. There has to be another way.
Wait. On the first day of college, he met the love of his life.
Oh, fate.
Isn't that lovely?
Who's the love of his life now?
I think her name was Laura. I'm just forgetting.
Oh.
Off the top of my head, I forget her name. But I do just remember. So now he's got three little girls.
What?
And the only thing that marks him out is that he has a slight limp still.
And a sissy dick, as they call them.
What's that?
A dick that makes girls only.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, I am happy for him.
I am.
What an absolute survivor.
What an absolute.
I love a survivor story. What a fucking hero.
He dragged himself for 3 hours to that window. Isn't that nuts?
Delighted for him that he lived.
It's amazing.
Thank you, Sophie.
Thank you.
Shook now, obviously. Thank you, dear listeners.
I apologise for shaking you.
You'll get more of that over on our Patreon, should you wish. I'm going to keep my Victorian nightmare and I'm going to give it to you over there behind...
The paywall.
That paywall.
I feel very sorry. I've just absolutely monopolised the episode.
No, I was absolutely gripped.
Gripped. Okay, good. Thank God.
See you next week. We'll be with Cassie again. Ta-ra!
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.